KZX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. President Trump now calling for Iran's complete surrender of its nuclear program, saying the U.S. controls the skies over all of Iran, and says a strike against the supreme leader is not off the table, posting he's an easy target. ABC's Karen Travers says it's a big change after U.S. and Iran nuclear talks were scheduled.
That sixth round of talks was scheduled for last weekend in Oman, and Iran canceled it after the Israeli strikes. Now, the president had said that he had told Iran to make a deal and that they need to make a deal, but he said right now he is not too much in the mood to negotiate.
The commander-in-chief of the Iranian army issuing a new warning for Israel, saying a punitive response is coming. ICE agents took New York comptroller Brad Lander into custody today. Sources tell ABC News he was detained for obstructing an immigration hearing. Lander is also running for New York City mayor. A press release says he was observing immigration hearings. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For 92.7 WMDX News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. State Superintendent Jill Underley is condemning the budget plan Republicans passed last week. Their proposal increases some funding for special education, but not to the level Governor Tony Evers and families were pushing for. However, it does not increase general aid for Wisconsin schools at all. Underley says the budget motion fails the state's students, educators, and public schools, arguing that it raises property taxes, cuts youth mental health funding, and doesn't support students with disabilities. Superintendents and school board members across the state say a lack of adequate funding increases from state lawmakers is forcing their hand, and they have no other choice but to ask their residents to pay more taxes just to keep the lights on and staff paid at school. Meanwhile, a Republican-authored bill would restrict school districts' abilities to use those referendums. Joanne Krulatz explains.
At the Capitol, a bill to restrict how school districts could request tax increases through referendums had a public hearing in the Assembly Education Committee on Thursday. Delafield Republican Representative Cindy Duchow says too many districts are asking for more money. She wonders how much money is too much money for school districts. Eau Claire Democrat Christian Phelps says districts are already practicing fiscal responsibility by asking their voters for a tax increase and wondered why Republicans would want to strip local control from schools. The bill is unlikely to be signed by Governor Tony Evers if it makes it through the legislature.
And we have few details about a hazmat situation in Madison last night. The State Journal reports that the Wisconsin Department of Justice was on the scene at Skyline Drive on the west side. Madison firefighters and police responded too. Now, we don't know much, but firefighters told reporters on scene there was no imminent danger to the public. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson, 92.7 WMDX News.
A win for OKC. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Basketball, the Thunder beat the Pacers 120-109 to take a 3-2 lead in the NBA Finals. Indiana's Tyrese Halliburton re-injuring that right ankle and calf muscle in the first quarter ended up with only 4 points in 34 minutes of play. The Thunder's Jalen Williams with a career-high 40 points in the postseason asked, was that the game plan or are shots just dropping in for him?
Probably a little bit of both. I won't give too much into the game plan, but a lot of it is just me being aggressive, seeing what's open and taking those shots.
Game 6 is Thursday night in Indy. Baseball, the Brewers face the first-place Cubs tonight at Wrigley Field. Chicago with a 5.5-game lead in the NL Central. Ahead of the crew, pitcher Colin Ray on the kind of standard manager Craig Counsell has set in the Cubs clubhouse this year.
Yeah, I think he just has the expectations of us doing the little things right, coming in every single day, giving your best effort, holding each other accountable for those things when you step through those doors every single day.
That's Cubs pitcher Colin Ray with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
This report is brought to you by Freedom Fireworks, with 20 locations throughout southeastern Wisconsin. FreedomFireworksWI.com.
Mostly sunny, warm, and muggy, with high temperatures today tapping the mid-80s. Got chances for showers and thunderstorms early this evening, and some of them have the chance to be strong to severe, pecking hail and high winds. Then tomorrow, cooler temperatures alongside more rain and thunderstorms. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot, currently 82 degrees.
The 4th of July is right around the corner, and Freedom Fireworks has everything your family needs for a safe and exciting holiday celebration. With 20 southeastern Wisconsin locations fully stocked up with everything from sparklers to artillery shells, thundersnaps to 500-gram aerials, Freedom Fireworks guarantees to bring smiles and cheers to every backyard celebration. For fireworks from all the top brands and specials that can't be beat, go to freedomfireworkswi.com for a location near you. Freedom Fireworks wishes you a safe and happy 4th of July.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Todd Michaels joins us now.
I have to give a shout out to Oshkosh. It's a very underrated city.
There was also a restaurant there I really liked. I don't think it's there anymore.
Yeah, the Tally's was great. I may have gone to like a prom dinner there or something like back in my day too, Pete.
A little calzone before you tear it up in the dance floor.
Man, there's nothing better than wearing a tuxedo and a little calzone in your cummerbund.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Pete Schwabe.
On the next Nightlight, Madison film critic Rob Thomas joins me for some movie talk, and then Milwaukee Journal Sentinel music writer Piet Levy joins me to talk Summerfest. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8. A new choice. Madison's real news and great conversation. 92.7 WMDX.
From the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Alba Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Alba.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Alba, along with our producer and engineer, Mr. Aaron Zommers, on the board. It is 6 minutes past the hour of 2 o'clock on this Tuesday, June 17th, 2025. It is a great day to be a Wisconsinite. Welcome in, everybody, here at the world headquarters of Civic Media, downtown Madison, where skies are partly cloudy right now. It is sultry. Going to be in the 80s in Madison for highs today. It is humid, I can attest. Walked over and got a little coffee this morning before the show or before we started getting going here, and it's already pretty darn hot. So normally, the studio is freezing, at least in the afternoon. I'm wearing a sweater. Now, today, the one day that we could use a little air conditioning.
It's pretty toasty.
It's pretty toasty. I feel like a Pop-Tart.
Yeah, me too, just slowly cooking.
But no fear. About 3 o'clock, the freezer will kick in.
I'm
pretty confident.
This is partly cloudy. I can barely walk outside and keep my eyes open. It's so bright.
It is pretty bright out. But it's going to be, hey, I'm ready for summer weather. I'm not going to complain. I've been wanting some summer weather, so I am ready for it. Hopefully you're ready for a great show today. Going to be a great one indeed. Coming up at the bottom of this hour, we're going to be joined in studio by James Small. He is the Rural EMS Outreach Program Manager at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. James Small going to be here to talk about something that is near and dear to my heart. I know that many Wisconsinites are concerned about this, is our EMS system, emergency management system, also our EMTs as well. Emergency services, because here's what's happened over the years. Is we've seen more folks grow up and move away from rural areas, and then the population that's there is aging, and many of the people that are in charge of EMS, EMT services in rural Wisconsin have either died off or simply gotten too old to do the job. And a lot of younger folks don't feel called to do that. We're going to talk about what this means for Wisconsin, what this means for the legislature and the governor, what this means for all of us across the state of Wisconsin. And by the way, don't just think that this is only a rural, like you got to go way up in the country. There are places like in Waukesha, you drive 10 miles and you're essentially in the country. Go to Green Bay, areas where you can drive 10 miles and you're basically in the country. So this is an issue that is important to all of us, or should be, across the state of Wisconsin. And hour number two, little what's worse for you today. It's Tuesday. That means Taco Tuesday. What's worse today, Taco Bell or Taco John's?
Every dinner at the winner tonight.
Have you eaten at a Taco John's?
I've eaten at a Taco John's. It's been a minute, though.
Remind me, I have a story about Taco John's.
All right, all right. We'll get to that.
We'll do a Taco John's story in hour number two. And also in the bottom of hour number two, very honored to be joined here at the desk in studio by Wisconsin State Representative Jody Emerson, a Democrat from the Eau Claire area. She's been on the show once before when we took the show on the road, the Trigvy and Reed Galen, up at Osseo at the Norske Nook, enjoyed some pie with Representative Emerson. She is the ranking member on the Assembly Committee for Universities and Colleges. She is going to be here because that's where we're going to start the show, where we're going to end the show, and that is on some major news happening just over a block away from where we're at in downtown Madison at the Wisconsin State Capitol. Now, last night, if you follow me on the socials, Facebook, Twitter, and the like, the follow sign is at All Ball Show on Twitter X, Twix, and the Todd All Ball Show on Facebook. And I posted late last night some breaking news from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, the flagship university here in Madison of the University of Wisconsin system. I know. It's now called the Universities of Wisconsin. Well, I still say the proper name is UW System, so that's what I like to refer to it as. We had, from our sources, gotten some breaking news. We passed it along last night, and it was this, that both mainly Democrats that I've talked to and staff in the Capitol, and also a couple of Republicans that will still talk to me, tangentially confirmed by saying, well, you're not too far off. And it was this devastating news coming out of the Capitol that the Joint Finance Committee, most powerful committee in the legislature, controlled by Republicans, made up of assembly folks and senators, only two Democrats on both sides, so controlled by Republicans, our old friend, and I say that sarcastically, State Senator Howard Markline is the co-chair on the Senate side. Of course, University of Wisconsin-Richland in Richland Center was closed a couple of years ago, and Howard Markline and his counterpart in the Assembly, who is also on the Joint Finance Committee, Mr. Kurtz, Tony Kurtz, said, oh, we don't have the power. There's nothing we can do. We can't get another $3 million in the state budget to save UW-Richland. I don't want to go down that road because that isn't specifically what this is about today. But the Joint Finance Committee was leaked last night. We had a hand in that, I'm proud to say, by getting the word out that when the Joint Finance Committee met today, I saw the agenda on the agenda for today, which they got underway about an hour ago, that was the budget of the University of Wisconsin system. Governor Evers had requested over $300 million in increases to the UW system. Because during the Walker years, the last time I worked in the Capitol, the UW system budget got gutted by Republicans in control. So Tony Evers was trying to restore some of that money. Remember, UW system led by President Jay Rothman, Board of Regents of the system are now controlled by appointees from Democratic Governor Tony Evers. And they've made slashes. They've closed half of the two-year campuses, six of the 12. They made other cuts throughout the UW system. Gotten rid of largely of DEI, all at the behest and request primarily of Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. And they thought, well, if we play ball with these guys, if we make some of these big cuts, if we get rid of DEI, they'll be nice. Remember the parable of the frog and the scorpion? There's a scorpion that wants to cross the river. There's a frog by the bank in the water. And the scorpion says, if you just give me a ride on your back across the other side, I'll be so indebted to you. And the frog says, yeah, but you're a scorpion. You could sting me and kill us both and we drowned. And the scorpion says, no, I'm not like that. I'm not like other scorpions. You can trust me. And finally convinces the frog to give him a ride. And halfway across the river, the scorpion stings the frog. The poison rushes into the frog, and they both begin to drown. And the frog looks at the scorpion and says, you gave me your word. Why would you do this? And the scorpion simply replies, because that's who I am. That's my nature. UW System President Jay Rothman thought that by being a more amiable frog, that he could change the mind of Republicans in the state legislature, that he could make things different. But last night, the scorpion that is politically UW or the Republican legislature stung him. And it was announced and leaked out that the Joint Finance Committee today intended not only to not, to use double negative, they're not going to approve Governor Evers' $300 million plus in increases. They're not even going to approve current funding levels that they intend today, or intended perhaps now, to cut $87 million from the UW system budget. And in talking to Democratic sources at the Capitol, if that were to happen, and if Republicans in the legislature were to pass a bill that included $87 million in cuts to UW system, there is a feeling, at least among some Democrats on the Senate side, that they were then ready and prepared to call on Democratic Governor Tony Evers to not just line item, use his veto pen, one of the most liberal veto pens in the country. I don't mean that large liberal, but small L liberal, has a lot of purview. So the thought was that they would cut, or they wouldn't even be able to use the line item to get rid of these terrible cuts. And they might, they may, keyword may, call on Democratic governor from their own party to veto the entire budget. Because remember, unlike the U.S. budget, if Wisconsin legislature and governor don't come to terms, don't pass a budget, government does not shut down. State government does not shut down. What happens is it continues on at the current level for the next 2 years. So if the governor were to veto the entire budget that included potentially $87 million in cuts to UW system, that would essentially be an $87 million gain for system. You understand where I went there? That by cutting, that by vetoing the budget that included, if it included $87 million in cuts, the governor was essentially saying, okay, UW, I know this is not what you want, but at least you get to continue at current levels for two more years. And so we put this out on our socials last night. I know that other people, after we did, amplified that. I know that our guest coming up in the second hour, Jody Emerson, was amplifying that last night in the Eau Claire area, was going through education circles. And today, about an hour before the show, it was announced that the Joint Finance Committee, guess what, decided to pull that from the agenda, at least so far. It's a very fluid situation. Because apparently, from what I'm told, a lot of Republican legislators on the Joint Finance Committee got a lot of calls from a lot of angry constituents saying you cannot kill the Wisconsin idea. And so far, it has been pulled. Now, also from what I'm told, that if they're to meet deadlines, the Joint Finance Committee has to do something with the UW budget by a week from today. So coming up in hour two at 3:30, really appreciate her fitting us into her very busy schedule. Representative Jody Emerson is going to be sitting right next to me and give us a live update. Perhaps we might actually see part of this motion by the Republicans and get a real number for you. Maybe we won't know anything more. But this is the last 12 hours, 12 to 15 hours, is great, a great example that when the truth is disseminated and people react, that results can happen. So congratulations to each one of you out there who called your legislator this morning and put enough pressure on for them to at least temporarily reconsider this $87 million cut. Because I talked to my former boss last night, former state senator Dale Schultz, who once chaired the university committee on the Senate side, was once Senate majority leader, longtime Joint Finance Committee member. He agreed. There's no way that UW could absorb $87 million in cuts without most likely closing the remainder 6 2-year campuses across the state and very likely closing at least 1 4-year university in the state. and or completely gutting colleges from within universities across the state. It would be devastating to the Wisconsin idea. What is the Wisconsin idea? One person asked me last night. And what are land-grant universities, and what's the connection to the Republican Party? We'll explain all of that on the other side. Don't go anywhere. It's a busy Tuesday. You're listening to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome to Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
It's a party on the patio at the Lazy Oaf Lounge, and you're invited every Tuesday at 5:30. It's just Merle and a girl, and Thursdays on the patio feature singer-songwriter Shelly Faith.
Well, hey, bartender, won't you pour me another?
Music starts at 5:30. It's live music on the patio at the Lazy Oaf Lounge every Tuesday and Thursday. The Lazy Oaf Lounge, 1617 North Stoughton Road in Madison. Find specials, menus, and more at LazyOafLounge.com.
Hey, Gordy. How you doing?
Oh, Arthur. Great. Great to see you. What are you doing in the studio?
Well, I need to talk to you about doing a commercial.
Okay. Well, you know, to get a commercial on the air here, you just go down to the sales department. It's right next to the bathroom.
I don't think you understand.
Oh, I understand plenty. You salespeople drink a lot of coffee. That's why the bathroom's right there.
Right. But I need to have you make a commercial about commercials.
Wait. A commercial about a commercial? I don't follow.
I want to tell potential business owners out there how to contact me to get a commercial on WMDX.
Okay, I get it. Okay, let's come up with something. Let's see. Business folks can contact you directly, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yep. What's the email, huh?
Okay, so it's sales@WMDXradio.com.
Oh, wait. Run that by me again.
sales@WMDXradio.com. So we could put all that together and get into a commercial, get on the air soon?
Arthur, my friend, I think we just did.
Advertise on WMDX Radio. Email Arthur, sales@WMDXradio.com.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
We are the National Park Foundation, and together with you, we're creating a future where every person, every generation, gets their chance at an unforgettable moment. Learn more at nationalparks.org/foundation.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Coming up after the bottom of the hour news update, of course, we have Pam Jahnke standing by, the fabulous farm babe, as she likes to call herself, in the Midwest Farm Report. Check of weather and sports with Mike Clemens as well. Then we're going to have in studio here James Small, Rural EMS Outreach Program Manager at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Cannot wait for that. And then coming up in hour two at 3:30, Wisconsin State Representative Jody Emerson, the ranking Democrat on the Assembly Committee on Universities and Higher Education. Going to be here talking about this breaking news overnight. We talked about it last night on our socials at Allball Show and the Todd Allball Show on Facebook. That our sources told us that the Republican-controlled Joint Finance Committee, who is meeting right now, they started at 1 o'clock on the agenda, confirmed earlier or last night, was the budget for the University of Wisconsin system, now known as the Universities of Wisconsin. And our sources told us that the Republicans plan to introduce a motion today to gut the system, to cut $87 million from the current budget, not from the $300 million-plus that Governor Evers proposed, but to cut the current budget, $87 million, which would have devastating consequences on this university. Now, today, that motion so far has been pulled. They could bring it back up on the agenda. This meeting could go on into the night. We're told that University of Wisconsin's budget has to be taken up by a week from today. So this is very fluid. And coming up at hour two at 3:35, Representative Jody Emerson will be here to give us the latest. But it's critical, if you care about the universities, to stay on top of this and do what you did this morning. Call these legislators and tell them we're not going to give up the Wisconsin idea. What is the Wisconsin idea? One person asked me last night. It was created, or at least thought of, some people credit former Chancellor Van Nuys with the idea, saying that he wanted the university to extend to everyone. It's largely summed up in the phrase that the borders of our university are the borders of our state. In other words, that the university should not be limited to a building or even a campus, but should affect and help everybody's lives. That's why you have in Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin Extension Program, focused on rural communities and agriculture. That's why you have economic development program that's run through the university. It's why we have a medical school, a rural medical program now, to help people study at UW-Madison, become doctors, and then settle and practice in rural communities that need these doctors. And by the way, this is not a Republican or Democratic idea. This is a Wisconsin idea. It stems from the fact that University of Wisconsin is a land-grant university. A land-grant university is an institution or higher education in the country that was designated by a state to receive the benefits from something called the Morrell Acts of 1862 and 1890. Basically, what happened was Southerners were absent during the Civil War, as it turns out. So back in these days, Republicans were the good guys, and they were guys at the time. Republicans during the Civil War in Congress set up a funding system that would allow states to modernize their weak higher education system. The Morrell Acts of 1862 provided land in the western parts of North America at that time, including Wisconsin, that states sold to fund new or existing colleges and universities. The law specified that the mission of these institutions is to focus on the teaching of practical agriculture, science, military science, and engineering, although, quote, without excluding other scientific and classical studies, unquote. The mission was in contrast to the historic practice of existing colleges, which offered a narrow classical curriculum based heavily on Latin, Greek, and mathematics. That's where the old ivory tower image comes from. So this went back and forth. It was vetoed by President Buchanan, and it took Abraham Lincoln, a Republican, to sign this into law and create land-grant universities so that it was extending a higher education to the non-hoity-toity, my words. Not the ivory tower. But let's create folks in agriculture, i.e. in Wisconsin, the Master Cheesemaker Program, of which we have people from all over the world study here about cheese and agriculture. How many short courses? How many farmers have gone to short courses at Madison to learn agriculture and gone back into their communities? And this was led by Republicans and signed by Abraham Lincoln. Former Republican governor of Wisconsin, I know that irritates some of my Democratic and progressive friends, Robert M. Fighting Bob La Follette. Bob La Follette was a Republican for his entire career until he left the party to create the Progressive Party and run for president. He was a Republican in this state that fought for expansion of the Wisconsin idea. And former governor Republican Tommy George Thompson was a great, and he's a graduate of UW-Madison, undergrad and law school, and ended up being the University of Wisconsin president, the system president, for a couple of years after he was governor, after he was in Washington. And yet this current iteration of MAGA Republicans of my former party in Madison up the road on the Capitol now wanting to gut this. Why? Like the scorpion. Because it's their nature now. I sat in closed-door committees, guys, where elected Republican officials despised higher education in this state, despised the university. Oh, just a bunch of liberals. And yes, sure, there are liberals there. Turns out, like Catholics, they're everywhere. We're going to stay on this. It is a fluid situation. But the Wisconsin idea is still alive and well. For now, we're going to talk to Jody Emerson, hour number two. But come on back. When we return, we're going to have a conversation on rural EMS across the state. Sitting right here will be James Small. It's the Todd Allball Show across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Tom Harbin here. You're listening to 92.7 WMDX.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Big budget cuts potentially on the horizon for families that face food insecurity and, in turn, the farmers that try to help them. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Tuesday. Details on potential cuts to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP. That's next.
When hot weather strikes your cattle, milk production drops and feed intakes decrease. Summer heat also impacts the quality of your herd's reproduction. Protect your cows and grow your bottom line. Add BioVets Bovine Goldlight to your cow's daily ration. Bovine Goldlight keeps the herd hydrated, maintains milk production, and keeps your breeding program in check. Learn more about Bovine Goldlight at bio-vet.com.
Innovation, that's BioVet.
It is estimated that in Wisconsin, some 618,000 people face food insecurity every day, not knowing where their next meal will come from. Now, potential cuts to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program could mean another 700,000 people will be impacted. Jackie Anderson is Executive Director of Feeding Wisconsin, and she said a lot of those people impacted kids.
I was talking to someone at Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin the other day, and he said that the spike in childhood hunger since 2021 is the biggest since the Great Recession, which means that over the past couple of years, the need in childhood hunger has absolutely increased. And so that means that then our food pantries, again, are having to augment that. So one of the food partners that they work with in Fond du Lac actually reached out to Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin and said that already she's seeing that the school program that they offer is almost too popular and is in danger of not being sustainable.
Jackie Anderson, she's the executive director of Feeding Wisconsin. She said right now the Senate is proposing an additional $211 billion reduction in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program operating funds. She said that not only hurts the families and children that depend on it, it also makes it difficult to use the funds available to buy locally, and that impacts local growers.
On a dairy, decisions are never made in a vacuum. Your products, technologies, protocols, they're all connected. Or at least they should be. Introducing Empower Dairy from Merck Animal Health, the only full solution portfolio in the dairy industry. Empower is more than just powerful identification, monitoring, and biopharma tools. It's about how they work together to eliminate guesswork and solve specific problems. Learn how at m-power-dairy.com.
And today, the Midwest Farm Report team's headed to Bear Creek for a preview on this year's Wisconsin Farm Technology Days. Follow us, Midwest Farm Report, on social media, and we'll share the details. I'm Pam Yonke.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Mostly sunny, warm, and muggy with high temperatures today tapping the mid-80s. Got chances for showers and thunderstorms early this evening, and some of them have the chance to be strong to severe, packing hail and high winds. And tomorrow, cooler temperatures alongside more rain and thunderstorms. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot, currently 82 degrees.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at mda75.org.
The John and Gordy Show.
Mike McCabe joins us, by the way.
Yes, Mike. You know about the Savannah Bananas.
Yeah.
The announcer calls them the Nanners.
They have all kinds of antics.
They have,
I mean, it's
they have
great.
Bright yellow uniforms.
Yes, they do.
And they do performance dances at home base.
Or
the
in the
players
field.
Are out there like cheerleaders.
Yeah. And even the umpires get involved.
Yeah, they do.
Weekday morning, 6 till 8 on 92.7 WMDX and the Civic Media app. John Peterson and Gordy Young.
On our next show, it's going to be a very special Dumpster Fire Wednesday.
So many stories we haven't gotten to. Well, we're going to get to them and we're going to burn them.
The John and Gordy Show, weekday morning, 6 till 8.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
Welcome back to the Tallyball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. 35 minutes now past the hour, 2 o'clock on this Tuesday, June 17th. We'll continue to monitor this very fluid situation up the street here. The Joint Finance Committee, again, coming up at hour 2. We're going to have State Representative Jody Emerson here live in studio to talk about these potential cuts coming from the Joint Finance Committee. But right now we turn our focus to another part of the university, and joining us in studio, equally as happy and proud and honored to have James Small, the Rural EMS Outreach Program Manager at the UW School of Medicine and Rural Health. James, thanks for being with us. How are you?
Well, thanks for having me on today.
Well, it's our pleasure. People that listen to the show regularly know I grew up in Richland Center, a town of 5,000 people in southwest Wisconsin. These rural issues are particularly important to me. I had a couple of stints on the city council, Richland Center, and I actually chaired the Police and Fire Commission, which we worked closely with the EMS directors of Richland County, that sort of thing. And this is something that I think is under-talked about, so I really appreciate the opportunity to have you here to give some light to this. Before we get into that, tell us, as we like to say, a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up, and how did you get into this?
So I grew up on Washington Island up in northern Door County.
Oh, my God. Did you really?
I'm a graduate of Washington Island High School, which is the smallest public school in Wisconsin.
That is amazing. I've never met anybody who grew up on Washington Island. So did your parents have roles or jobs on the island?
Yep. My dad's an excavating contractor, and he also was on the fire department and was an EMT, or still is an EMT, actually, up there. And my mom was a teacher at the elementary school.
Wow. So let's just pause right there for a second. What was it like growing up there? I've been to Door County. I have never. It's part of my goal this summer is to get to Washington Island. What was it like growing up there?
You know, I think all kids think there's nothing to do, right? That's what I hear from my own kids living outside of Milwaukee. Mm. Oh, there's nothing to do. But I don't think that was really the case there. Yeah. There was always something to do. You have a very strong sense of community there on the island. Everybody's kind of looking out for each other, willing to step up and help each other. So it was just, a very unique environment to grow up there culturally versus growing up in a big city, for instance. The people just have that connection, and they just intuitively know that they're connected.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that I've carried with me through my career now, over 30 years into emergency responding.
That's amazing. What was the population, or is the population of Washington Island more or less?
In the winter, it's about 700 or so year-round. And then in the summer, that goes up to several thousand with all the summer homes and all the tourism and stuff.
Just, man, I didn't mean to go down a tangent, but I've never met anybody who grew up there, and I've heard nothing but spectacular things about it from people who have traveled there. So, all right, so you grew up in Washington Island, you graduated from the smallest high school in Wisconsin, and then what?
Well, I started in EMS actually on the island in 1993 while I was still in high school, and then went off to college. I went to Carroll in Waukesha. Got a bachelor's degree there. My bachelor's degree is actually in criminal justice. I started as a pre-med major, found that probably wasn't the right path for me. And at the same time, I was doing additional EMS training and got a paramedic license while I was also working my bachelor's degree. And I made a pivot and worked in law enforcement also for 25 years, left that a couple years ago, and have just kind of made a career out of being an emergency responder. Spent the last 11 years of my career as both a police chief and fire chief, and I did that in two different municipalities here in Wisconsin. Came to the university, July of 22 when we started the EMS outreach program.
So this is a relatively new program within the university then?
Yes. Yep. July of 2022 is when we launched.
Wow. That's incredible. And how is it going so far?
Well, there's no lack of work.
I'm not trying to drag you down a political rabbit hole, but, you know, funding, you know, we're going to get more into the funding a little bit, but I mean, the funding for the university in its entirety right now is a hotbed issue. I would hope to goodness that from whatever side of the aisle people are on, that everyone would recognize the importance of the program like this.
Well, our program is 100% federally funded, which has brought some uncertainty.
Yeah,
this
again,
spring.
Right? Yeah.
And I think that's now been resolved. I think from what it sounds like, the funding is secure now going forward for the Office of Rural Health program that exists in every state in the country. As far as in the state, a lot of this, and when we talk about EMS, we need to look back to that this is a functional local government, first and foremost. This is a service that's provided by the government for the betterment of the community. And at its base level, it's a town, city, or village providing that service in one way or another. Although you do see some counties that are doing countywide systems in Wisconsin. But from a political standpoint, I think this is a really unique space relative to some other issues because it's not really partisan. I haven't had anybody come up and talk about it in a partisan way. There's different ideas on how to fix it, but there's a general consensus that there's a lot of challenges in this space. There's a lot of funding issues in this space, and there's a workforce issue in this space. That's agreed upon. Just how do you get to those solutions varies a little bit, but I think that's more based on personal philosophy than partisanship.
Gives me some hope. That's good to hear that people aren't trying to partisanize this, because in my opinion, it should not be. Help us understand a little bit, because we hear that you're the UW School of Medicine and Rural Health. So what is the mission of this relatively new program? Are you training people, giving them basically degrees in EMS and rural EMS, or is this to be advocacy for local government? What's the mission?
Most of my work is done with local government. So our goal of the program is to work on reliability and sustainability of the EMS response system itself. So a lot of that depends on funding from local government. It depends on organizational structure of the systems. We're not doing anything with patient care or system quality at all. There's other excellent training providers to provide that training. That's not something we need to duplicate. But where the gap really existed was to work with these local governments, particularly the small local governments that don't have the resources, to help walk them through that process, whether it's how do you increase funding, how do you maybe take your two volunteer ambulances and push them together and create one full-time ambulance and split the cost between the two communities. A lot of those kind of discussions.
We're talking with James Small, the Rural EMS Outreach Program Manager at the UW School of Medicine and Rural Health. James, when you look at the current state of things across the state, what do you find the biggest challenge? I'll use that word instead of problem. What's the biggest challenge for these municipalities? And the second part of that, what's the cause, in your opinion?
I'm not sure on the cause. I think that we've seen a decline nationwide in the availability of EMS services, particularly with volunteer services, that there's just a decline in availability of volunteers, I think is the best way to say that. I don't think that there's a lack of people wanting to go into it. Our licensing data doesn't say that. Mm-hmm. Our licensing data is pretty consistent going back over a decade, that at any given point, we have about 18,000 people that have licenses in the state. What we do see when you get into the licensing data is that about 7.5% of them are leaving the field every year and turning in their license. Mm-hmm. And then that's not even counting the people that are going from like one employer to another and so on, and some of that attrition. So maintaining a workforce, when you think about that, every 12 years, we have to train the equivalent of the entire workforce. Mm-hmm. That's problematic. And then as we've seen the costs increase, that becomes very challenging, I think, particularly for the small municipalities to make that lift and look, use the tools that are available to create the finances that are necessary to pay for things. Because they may be going from a full-time staff member and hiring a volunteer staff member to a full-time staff member, which is considerably more expensive. And then we also have like hyperinflation in this space, whether it's on capital equipment, personnel costs are outpacing CPI by 2 to 3-fold going back almost 10 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all at once, where a few years ago you might have been hiring a full-timer for $50,000 a year, that position might be 80 or 90 now.
Wow. Is that straight pay by the benefits on top of
and
that?
Benefits then? On right. top of that. And as you know, health insurance is anybody's guess how that goes year to year.
Yeah.
So it's gotten really, really expensive, really, really fast. And, you know, when it was a volunteer system, you know, back in the 80s when a lot of these systems really came of age, they started in the 70s and kind of gelled in the 80s. There wasn't 911 yet. Mm-hmm. So the amount of, the access of the system had a barrier in it, which 911 is erased. We have 911 across the state of Wisconsin, across most of the country at this point. So it's very easy to access the 911 system, but then having that capacity to handle these increases too. Because if you look at some of these systems, you know, if they formed back in the early 70s, they might have done like a dozen calls that first year. Mm-hmm. That same system might be doing like a couple thousand now. And you're trying to do it with the same base that you built it off of these volunteers that came in that wanted to come help the community, and they needed a first aid card and a CPR card because there wasn't even EMS licensing yet. For now, it's a couple hundred hours of training to get in the door.
Do you see, and I've heard this from other people around the state, do you see an increase of these calls? Yes, partly because of the access to the 911 system, which I think we can all say is a good thing, but also an aging population where it's no longer someone, God forbid, is having a heart attack only. It's somebody fell in the house and their spouse can't help get them up, or they're there alone. And so they call the fire department, or they call the EMS. And a lot of this is just life service calls, is it not?
Yes. And there's been an annually increasing call volume statewide that's been going on for decades now. Mm-hmm. There was just a study done by Department of Health Services looking at what the reasons for an EMS call were. And one in six EMS calls in Wisconsin is for a fall, like you're describing. Yeah. The other thing that they found during that study is that Wisconsin is number one in fall-related mortality in the United States.
Really?
So we have lots of falls, and we have lots of people that die from falls.
I did not. That's fascinating, disturbing, but fascinating. Hopefully not, they're doing too many brand new old fashions in the call. I'm not sure, but I hope that's not the case. But very, very interesting. Let's talk a little bit about this workforce more, because you're much more, obviously much more versed in this than I am. I know a few years back, like a good friend of mine, Troy Everson, which was integral in the Viroqua and Vernon County EMS and EMT system. He now does that down in Burlington, Wisconsin. And I know he helped get through a piece of legislation years ago where high school students that were taking courses to be volunteers were allowed to actually help and actually do some of the stuff as long as they were with a licensed person on the team. And that really opened up and not just created more workforce, but also was almost like an apprentice type of training. Have you seen that have an effect?
Yes. You're seeing in a number of different regions around the state, the technical colleges are running what they call a dual enrollment program, where high school seniors will come in and learn a trade. And one of those programs might be fire and EMS. There's been a high demand for that. I've seen the technical college systems be very successful with that. There's also some high schools that have partnered with other training centers to offer EMT training right in the schools.
Wow.
And La Follette School of Public Policy just did an EMS-related report that came out in the last couple of weeks. And one of their key recommendations was expansion of the high school EMS programs to provide somebody access to a workforce. Because those kids that are going through those programs right now are going to find a job pretty quickly after coming out of it.
And good paying with good benefits generally.
Yes. Yep. This is going to be a job that probably has a living wage with good benefits working for a government right out of high school, potentially in some cases, and then continue on with further training like paramedic training and so on. But it's I think that's one tool that we need to look at. But just access to training in general, you know, when we did our ambulance reliability study a couple of years ago, one of the things that we found is about 13% of the services had an hour or more drive to a training center. Well, that's a huge barrier. If you're depending on volunteers to come in and they're going to work their regular job all day, drive an hour to training, spend 4 hours in training, drive an hour home, and then go back to their job the next day, their real job, and then they're going to do that 50 times. And that's a lot to ask of somebody who wants to come in and volunteer. So finding other access points is going to be or alternative ways to delivering that training is something we need to do.
If you have a question, text us on the Civic Media app. We'll maybe take your questions after this. More conversation with James Small from Rural EMS Outreach Program at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. You're listening to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hey, at the end of the day, everybody wants the same thing from their mattress. A good night's rest, am I right? It's not rocket science. You don't need a physics genius to make you a futuristic space bed. You just need someone to listen to what you want and who knows the materials that will get you there. And you might even be surprised to learn that that someone could be living right next door. At Verlo, we're your friendly neighborhood mattress genius. American made, locally crafted. Welcome to Verlo.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. For the last few months, Governor Tony Evers has said repeatedly that he would make a decision about whether or not to run for a third term after the state budget process is completed. In a recent opinion column at the Recombobulation Area, I made the argument that the decision that Evers should make should be to not seek a third term as Wisconsin's governor. This argument is not one of ideological differences or policy disagreements. Tony Evers has been a good governor and has served the state well. This more has to do with Evers' age. He'll be 75 years old in November 2026, and about how the Democratic Party has had a massive, inescapable problem in its unwillingness to pass the torch to the next generation. Tony Evers needs to do what so many other Democrats have struggled so mightily to do and step aside when the time is right. And after Joe Biden's catastrophic 2024, this is a conversation we need to be having, and we need to be having it now. Democrats can't keep repeating the same mistakes over and over. It's time to do things differently.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. May 12th, the U.S. Department of Justice reportedly requested all the state of Colorado's records relating to the 2024 federal election and the preservation of records related to the 2020 election. The request may relate to President Trump's effort to free a convicted Colorado election official. The records request is massive. In November 2024, there were 4.65 million registered Colorado voters, 3.3 million of whom cast ballots in the presidential election. Then, consider the records from every electronic ballot tabulator, voter registration and verification documents for each voter, and more. Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold told NPR, "What they're going to do with all this data, I don't know, but I'm sure they'll use it to push their ridiculous disinformation and lies to the American public," she said. There is speculation that it may be related to convicted Mesa County elections official Tina Peters, sentenced to 9 years for giving voting machine access to conspiracy theorists tied to MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell. The week before the Colorado records request, DOJ was directed by President Trump to, quote, take all necessary action to help secure the release of Peters. To date, Colorado has reportedly provided two copies of its master voter list to DOJ and its 2024 voter history file. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
Set out for a brand new start. He's an island boy. Now he's an island boy. Living his life where stress is the enemy. Now he's an island boy. A stone's throw from St. Croix. He's finally found his peace of serenity.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. 8 minutes before the hour of 3 o'clock, the top of the hour news update for you. Come back with what's worse, a taco edition. And then at the bottom of the next hour, State Representative Jody Emerson on the breaking news, the fluid news, the Joint Finance Committee on proposed cuts to the tune of $87 million to UW's system, which has been pulled so far from JFC. We'll update you on the bottom of the hour on that. But right now, we are joined, as it turns out, by a real-life island boy, James Small, Rural EMS Outreach Program Manager at the UW School of Medicine and Rural Health, not from St. Croix, but rather Wisconsin's own Washington Island. And over the break, James, we're talking maybe we could do a show together from Washington Island later in the year.
I think that would be fun. Maybe we could do it right off the dock on the ferry or something like that.
I'm totally people. I am 100% down. So don't toy with me because I'm down for this. By the way, our own Parker Olson, the producer for Pat Kreitlow's show in the morning, says take Kreitlow's pontoon boat there. Well, Parker, great suggestion. I don't believe the waterways are navigable from Lake Wissota to Washington Island, but maybe, I don't know. We may have to portage at some point. But it's a beautiful place, right?
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Well, I look forward to that nervous anticipation. That'd be super cool. Let's finish our discussion here because I'm really, really enjoying this, talking about rural EMS, rural EMTs. We talked a little bit before the break here, James, about the challenges looking at workforce, maybe some of these new high school, I'm going to call them an apprentice program. Maybe that's not the right word, but essentially that's what it is. I think this is fantastic because so many young people today are saying, look, for whatever reason, I can't afford to go into college or maybe even technical school, but here's a program you can get into yet in high school. As you said, potentially get out, have a life-sustaining job, and you're helping the community. One of the things that I want to get your take on this, growing up in Richland Center, my uncle Basil was a volunteer firefighter for years and years and years. His whole family were very involved in the community. I knew people that were, we used to have EMTs and firefighters in our church and go to Sunday morning, they have pagers on. And that pager would, they'd have to leap out of the choir loft or out of the pew to go down. And it seems like we have fewer of those folks in our communities. I guess my argument or my thought is people are some of us are moving away from our communities where we grew up and the aging population. But I also think with other activities, gaming, you know, screens, that we don't celebrate our local EMS volunteer people enough. Does marketing play into this?
I think so. That's actually another key recommendation out of the La Follette study that they did was to look at how we're messaging this and look at some kind of a public information plan on bringing forth what this industry is all about. But I think when you look at the volunteers, everybody's having difficulty finding volunteers. That's a cultural, sociological event that's happened in our country. And I don't know that there's a decline in it. The conventional wisdom says that the increased training standards led to a decline in the number of volunteers. I don't believe that that's the case. Mm-hmm. I think that what we're seeing is just the same thing the church is seeing in the Lions Club and the Rotary Club and everything else, where you know, even if you have a group of volunteers, you probably have a small handful of people that are doing 80% of the work, and then the other 15 are doing the other 20%, things like that. And we see that really commonly in the EMS systems, particularly the small rural ones, where there's maybe four people doing 80% of the work, and then there, you know, 10 people might fill in the other 20%. Because when you look at running an ambulance, that's 17,520 hours a year that has to be staffed to staff an ambulance 24/7, 365, like it's required. That's a lot.
And many of these rural communities now, or at least some, I should say, are going to private services because they simply don't have the folks locally to volunteer or even pay them, right?
Yep. So that's common to see municipalities close their ambulance service and then contract with another entity. It might be another municipally owned ambulance neighboring them. It might be a private entity that they come in. It's becoming increasingly common too to see the municipalities collaborating and sharing that cost because the cost is so high now. Just running your own ambulance to do 100 calls a year and having to staff it potentially with full-time staff, because you're looking at one ambulance staffed with full-time staff with capital equipment costs and station and stuff, you're probably looking at $1 million a year.
Wow.
You know, and most of these small municipal budgets might be just a few hundred thousand dollars in some of these townships. So it's just way beyond their means.
Time has always gone too fast. We'd love to have you back either here or Washington Island, whichever we can work out in a future show. Is there something I have not asked you yet that you want to make sure people across the state know about this program and or anything you want to say about funding, your deal?
I think the biggest thing right now is that if somebody's interested in this career, come into it, come try it, come go take a class. There's all the technical college systems have EMS training centers associated with them. Go down to your local volunteer fire department. Even if EMS isn't for you, maybe the fire department's for you. Mm. But find a way to get involved in your community. That's what our small communities have been based on for, you know, centuries at this point, and build that sense of community back. And these departments are really integral in our small communities to building that sense of community. So get out and be part of it.
If people want to find you or the program, is there a website or anything like that you want to give out?
Yep. Wisconsin Office of Rural Health. So it's WORH.org/EMS is our EMS information. My email address directly is small5@wisc.edu. So SMALL5@WISC.edu.
Cool. We'll put those in the show notes, and we've got your contact information, so we can certainly get people in touch with you. We didn't even get to touch on, I would like to do this in a future show, the emergency management directors in these communities, because with climate change and stuff, it seems like more flooding, more things like that, more tornadoes, and those are also integral in our communities.
Yeah, and this, you know, EMS is part of that emergency response framework. So if that isn't there, and you have an ambulance that doesn't respond, that's an important part of these communities.
James Small, growing up in Washington Island, with all your experience in EMS, you seem the perfect person for this job. You're part of what makes Wisconsin great. Thanks for being here. Really appreciate you.
Thanks for having me today.
Our pleasure. Come on back. We'll talk a little what's worse and more of the Joint Finance Committee after this. You're listening to Across Wisconsin. I wish you were on an island. On the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is 92.7 WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Days of missile strikes between Israel and Iran continue to escalate, and now President Trump is calling for Iran's unconditional surrender of its nuclear program. A Republican has introduced a measure to limit U.S. involvement in Iran. GOP Senator John Thune is reacting.
Well, I mean, I think right now the president's within his authorities. He obviously has a lot of authority as commander-in-chief to respond to incidents that happen around the world. Obviously, we have a lot of military installations, bases, military personnel in the region right now. And so I think he's perfectly within his right to do what he's done so far.
A three-judge panel in appeals court is hearing arguments on President Trump's deployment of California National Guard to help deal with unrest in Los Angeles. A lower court last week ordered control of state troops to be returned to California's governor. And retail sales slumped in May, a sign consumers are pulling back on spending. Michelle Franzen, ABC News.